You were right, Ira. That's Weldon Irvine from his album Liberated Brother.
One of my favorites.
Yes, I knew you hit it. Dead on. Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and welcome to our panel for this Thursday. It's the 27th of February, 14 minutes past the hour of 9 o'clock. We welcome you to our proceedings. You can certainly join in on the fun by writing to us, panel at wamc.org, panel at wamc.org. Panel at WAMC.org. I was at the grocery store last night. A woman came up to me in the aisle and she said, I always write to the panel and you always say about the address, do people really write to you at the wrong address? And I said, about 40% of the time. Didn't believe it.
Really?
And I said, yeah, it happens all the time. I said, that's why we give the address so much.
Wow.
Panel at WAMC.org.
You got to spell panel right.
P-A-N... E-L, P-E, Panel, P-A-N-E-L at WAMC.org. Okay, let me introduce everybody to you. We'll get started. Investigative journalist and UAlbany adjunct professor of journalism, Rosemary Armeo.
Good morning.
How are you?
Good.
Excellent. Siena College professor of comparative politics, Vera Acarias-Kelly, joins us this morning.
Hello, everyone.
How are you?
I'm doing all right.
Wonderful.
How about you?
Thank you. We're all good. I think we're in a good mood. We'll get cynical in a minute. Ira Fussfeld is here, Daily Freeman publisher emeritus, and our dear friend. Hello, sir.
Nice to see you. And if Trump can misspell coronavirus, the listeners can misspell panel. That's my feeling about it.
There you go.
Well, that's true. Yeah, I agree with that. Alan Shartok is here as well. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Good morning. I'm delighted to be with you, and I wanted to ask Vera whether or not there's been any sighting of the new president yet at our place.
Oh, you mean in terms of since the unveiling?
This
and
is former Congressman Chris Gibson, who is now the president of Siena College.
Who I love.
No, his contract actually officially starts in June, so he probably visits with members of the Board of Trustee Committee and various other people, but not with us yet. But I'm working with my students to get some information
to the new president. Alan sends his regards.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing? Will I be in trouble shortly thereafter?
Thing,
oh, that's a good
thing.
Okay.
Buds.
We're very good friends, and
we went to
Tanglewood, and
really?
Mrs. Gibson, who is on the WMC Advisory Committee, she prepared fried chicken.
Oh, nice. Okay, well, I'm glad to hear that, because I was trying to figure out whether it's a good thing for me and Aaron from the Siena community to be on the radio or if we're going to have to work on him. But it's a good thing.
I think he likes us, and his wife loves us, so that's great.
Oh, that's even better.
Yeah, no, it's great.
We
love them. They've always been very nice to us.
Great. Excellent. Good. Well, then I can't wait to talk with him.
Or as my mother would have put it, he's the best of that Republican crowd.
Well, you know, he's from the old Republican crowd that you can still have conversations with.
He lets me tease him because he shot it when he was running. He shot a commercial in my front yard, making it look like he and his wife lived in our house.
Whoa.
Why?
Fake news?
So the reason was because a donor who had allowed his property to be used, and our properties went next to each other, who has a much larger, much nicer home, but they thought it looked too nice. So they decided to use our house as being more modest.
I see.
You see.
And they didn't want to use their own house.
No.
That donor is sitting there right now saying, oh, boy.
No, he's back in the city. But, you know, what's great about it is they did the whole commercial, and they digitally altered the back, and they didn't take out they took out the dead tree, which I would have liked them to just come in and actually remove the tree, but they didn't.
Well, you could have made that part of the contract for allowing your property to be filmed.
And then
you weren't thinking.
And then
Joe.
We got redistricted, and he wasn't our congressman anymore.
Well.
So,
and who is your congressman now?
Our congressional representative is Elise Stefanik. So.
Congratulations!
So they gerrymandered since Gibson has been in, because Gibson covered my market, and we are now represented by Delgado.
So Gibson was. This is probably three cycles ago, I believe.
Yes.
Would it change, right? Was that something like that?
Yes,
Alan?
Because after Gibson was not so great.
Yeah. So that was a shame. Anyway.
Yeah.
Hey, we have a show. Good morning and welcome. We have a lot to talk about. Last night at about 6:40, the president of the United States went into the White House press room. They showed him where it was, and he went in, and he talked about the president's or the presidential and the administration's response to the coronavirus. So apparently what the issue is that we shouldn't panic. That everything's under control, and by the end of the day, only two people will be sick. Also, two or four?
2%.
I thought he was giving numbers of there were 15 people, and then by the end of the time, they would get better.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then by the end of the week, there would be only five people. Okay. So,
keep buying stocks.
Meanwhile, he has this just amazing group of people, of scientists, up on the dais with him. And so he has this incredible group, and he chooses one of them to be the head of overseeing this, and it's Mike Pence, who is going to lead the coronavirus response. And he looked to reassure the country that his government was controlling the spread of the coronavirus after his administration weathered days of criticism. And certainly that criticism will go away now, won't it?
You know, I turned on that press conference. I was looking forward to it because I wanted to get information. And I thought this might be the time that Trump would be an honest broker of facts.
Oh, please. What world are you in?
Well, that's exactly. Fool me. What is it? Fool me once. You know, the whole.
Shame on me. Right.
I found myself, even as he was just introducing his remarks, that I didn't feel I could believe a word he said. I just think that's the legacy he has built up for himself. And this is really the first, well, it's not the first, but here is a national crisis. And many of us talked about this. What happens when there is a national crisis? Are we going to believe what he says? And in my case, the answer is no.
You know, one of the things that I thought was interesting about it was maybe about 3 or 4 minutes before he came out, they sent out the surrogate.
They all had to stand there.
And they all had to stand there.
Looking at their
And Wolf Blitzer was on with his panel, and they were saying, well, doesn't it reassure you that so-and-so and so-and-so and so-and-so are up there? And they go, yeah, they're the absolute best. They know this issue better than anybody. That's a really good sign. And I, like you, thought, oh, well, maybe that is a really good sign. And then when he starts to speak, we find out that he isn't going to listen to those people.
Well, I think, Joe, that he took a shot at humility. He tried that in the beginning. The Democrats can have anything they want. They want more than I do. Sure, give it to them and all the rest. But by the time he was done, he was blaming the Democrats for the fall of the stock market, you know. And,
the Democratic debate riled up the investors.
Except
and got them
the Democratic
worried.
Debate was
happened
after
the stock market
closed.
So this morning, my husband and I had a really fun conversation. My husband decided to call Pence from now on Pandemic Pence because he will be in charge. And if things go bad, it'll be Pandemic Pence. And I was thinking, imagine Pence says something that Trump doesn't approve of, and he'll be fired as the vice president. I mean, I don't know. This could be very interesting.
There is some thinking that this is good news for Nikki Haley because he's being shunted aside to another project. So Nikki Haley's now got a way to get in as vice president.
Yeah. Or the equally cynical possibility is that he did not want to put somebody who knows what they're doing in charge, because more likely they would disagree with his worldview, and he has more control over what Pence and the administration says.
He doesn't like Secretary Azar at all, the health and human services guy, and he seems to be in trouble as far as his job.
Oh, yeah, he'll be fired, right? He'll be gone in no time.
I think he's on his way out.
Yep,
yeah, that's
I agree.
The pattern.
I was surprised they let him speak.
that's true, but, you know, they let Nielsen speak, too, before they dumped her.
Well, he's running the show, and the secretary's running the show. And I doubt very much that it's going to be Pence who does anything substantive whatsoever. Yeah, the name of the game is he's in charge,
right?
Whatever that means.
Well, carry the water, right?
Well, he announced this morning that all media requests about the epidemic or whatever, what do you call it when you're pretending it isn't an epidemic? All must go
through.
They all, through the panic, the fake panic spread by the media, must go through the vice president's office. So there's a level of control over communication.
Oh, and I'm sure he'll call everybody back.
Did you come away from that press conference feeling good about the information you received? Did you feel like, you know, he's right? right, we shouldn't panic, and all of the rest, or did we come away saying there's just five people pointing in different directions?
I actually hope he's right. I don't think he is. I mean, Canada is preparing differently. Europe is preparing differently. Asia is preparing differently. Australia is preparing differently. Why should the United States be spared? I don't buy that whole thing. But
right.
I hope he's right.
Right, of course. And into all of that, Rosemary, comes this wicked case in California of one person, and they can't trace anybody who might have killed
him. How the heck did he catch it?
And what's interesting about that, of course, is if there's one, there's probably more than one.
Well, the other thing that jumped out at me in terms of the president's ignorance is how stunned he was to discover how many thousands of deaths there are during the quote-unquote regular flu season. And that is not a statistic that has been hidden from the American public.
If you want to be scared, go to the BBC from this morning and listen to their excellent story on smallpox.
Oh,
and
I heard that.
That
yeah.
was unbelievable.
Really?
It's
yeah,
coming back?
What'd you say?
Is it coming back? What's
no,
the story?
No, but they used that as an example of what could happen here, and there was utter chaos as a
the
result.
Spreading of it. And the lead up to it. Right.
Well, the real test comes now, where Trump has put the agencies on notice that he wants control, and you can't control germs, so the pandemic is going to do what it's going to do, and then how do the agencies respond? Will it be like the Weather Service in the face of obvious falsehood from the president? Mm-hmm. They folded. They were ordered to, and they folded. It and it kind of bubbled up later because of the press, what really was going on. What will happen now?
Will you remind us of that? I'm sorry.
This was when a hurricane was barreling down in the U.S.
Yeah,
and Trump
and we
misspoke.
Had the map with the extra Sharpie that said that Alabama was going to be.
He simply misspoke, which if he had come back and said, I just made a mistake. Sorry about that. Calm down, Alabama. But instead, he falsified the record. He insisted that the agency back him up. He insisted on that control and loyalty. Mm-hmm. And okay, that's at the time the press made a big deal that this was threatening lives. Here we have something much more out of control, potentially a disease that's spreading, could spread like wildfire.
This could be the worst. This could be the worst crisis that has ever confronted this country.
I mean, I hope that.
Well,
it
I think that's a little exaggerated, to
really?
Be honest. Yeah,
why?
I think that's exaggerated.
I said could be.
I do agree. It's a serious public health issue. I think that the medical community is not as centralized as the Trump administration would like it to be, and there are a lot of epidemiologists who work at various hospitals and independent institutions. And I believe they will speak up and educate the public. I think the best thing to do is actually to keep an eye on communications from the CDC, or if you'd like to go to other European health institutes that disseminate information. I think that's the most reliable. I wouldn't trust anything this administration says.
But Vera, CDC is funded by Trump, who has already cut millions of dollars from the budget. Mm-hmm. That's got to be on their mind. They are not independent.
So I had an opportunity a few years ago. Anthony Fauci, who is
he spoke yesterday.
You know, he was actually a special guest at Siena for graduation, and my husband and I were invited to sit right next to him at a table and had fascinating conversations about the Ebola virus and other challenges. Right?
Good dinner conversation.
It was actually. Yeah. I mean, you know, for people that are interested in those kinds of questions, it was a fascinating conversation about inoculation programs and so on. So I got the impression that our medical leadership in this country is exceptionally focused on doing what is right and necessary for the population of this country. I believe many of these people will simply step down from their posts and speak uninhibited if this White House attempts to confuse, obfuscate, or mislead the public on a public health issue.
And obviously that is more important than what I'm about to say. But I was I was also struck by the fact that Mr. Azar didn't even know that Pence, when he walked out, didn't even know that Pence was going to be in charge.
They told him just before the meeting, apparently. Yeah, there's definitely personnel problems in the White House, but that's hardly news, too.
But let's put aside for a second the politics of it all. And if, in fact, this virus extends into this country in any sort of significant way, and action is taken to try to prevent further spread, action such as closing schools, closing businesses.
Closing radio stations.
Yeah, but think of the ripple effect on people's lives. I mean, I don't have to spell it out. Everybody can come up with their own potential conclusions. But it's not unlike this could happen. We already see these empty streets in China.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Japan shut down its schools for a month.
And what about Italy this morning?
Italy's
in. So that's where, and then now let's put politics back in it. Do you want to, is Donald Trump the guy you want to see leading this country through this crisis? Is he going to be the Patton or the Eisenhower for marching around and putting an end to the virus?
Well, the answer would be a little, you'd be on more solid ground if you didn't have, you're watching the news, you have the deputy director of the CDC warning Americans that there would be more infections and saying that, quote, the trajectory of what we're looking at over the weeks and months ahead is very uncertain. And then a half an hour later, the president of the United States says, it's not, I don't think it's inevitable.
Right, which is what she said. She used the word inevitable. And then he was asked a question by, I think, Hallie Jackson of NBC. Uh-huh. And he said, oh, no, I didn't contradict. And then she said inevitable. Oh, yeah, well, I don't think it's inevitable. So he contradicted.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean,
that's the kind of mixed message
look,
you want.
This president has been saying all along, you know, lie. Mm-hmm. Somebody contradicts him. It doesn't matter. He's the president. Yeah. I mean, it's terrible.
Well, especially when we're going to can I pause you?
Yes, you can pause me.
Okay.
Sorry, I didn't look at the time.
Think of what you're going to say, write it down, and then we'll come right back to you. We're going to continue with our panel. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org is where you can write your letters. We'll be back right after this. Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. And we're going to go to letters and we'll continue our conversation as we work our way through those. We're talking about the president's response last night to the coronavirus. And we look to the obviously we haven't talked about it yet, but I'm sure it'll be brought up in the letters. And if not, we'll talk about it in a minute, which is the continued concern of the stock market, dot, dot, dot.
Right. Joe, I just want to point out that I've only been handed by our wonderful Sarah just a couple. Here.
Yeah, that's all we got. We don't have.
There'll be more coming.
They're coming, sort of.
Okay, so
people are afraid if they send in a letter, they might get the virus because we're talking about it.
Well, that's absolutely right.
Yeah,
there are some people who think if you drink Corona beer, you're going to catch the virus. Yeah. Oh my gosh, they're obviously Trump supporters.
You're joking, right?
No, I'm not.
I would have been dead a long time ago.
Can I make the point you shut me off on before?
I apologize. I'm sorry.
Okay. That's
I'm going to unpause you. Go ahead.
Unpause me. Yeah. There are two points, maybe on Trump's side. As I said in the break, I think that he does have what he says has an appeal to people. I'm one of them who just see this all as, oh my God, I'm never going to get this. This is all hype. And I think that that helps him get across what he's saying. Not everyone thinks he's nuts.
Well, we want to believe it, but we can't believe him because it's him.
Well, and the second thing is Democrats really do have an interest in his being wrong and exposed, because if the stock market continues on this downward trend, if there's a big hit, especially as we were getting closer to the election, that hurts Trump. So in a way, we do want it. I admit it, I do.
So that's so interesting. So you're saying that because the stock market took a $2,000
dip, yeah,
that you're not as unhappy as if it had happened under a Democratic
administration. I know this is a venal and terrible thing, but yes,
I hear you.
And they're right to criticize Democrats for thinking that way.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry, but I don't think that way. I mostly think along the lines of let's position our public health departments and our hospitals in case there is, you know, a regional outbreak.
What do you do?
The budget has to be, obviously, I think the budget that the Trump administration initially suggested was way too low. That was sort of the budget of one major hospital rather than a national plan.
Well, now it can be anywhere from 2 to 40 million.
He said, whatever you want, we'll give it to you.
I mean, I like Elizabeth Warren's idea. Take all the money going into the stupid wall and put it into
Well, I mean, what we have to
prevention.
Do is, number one, begin to think about training, providing specific training to a lot of of the medical staff in hospitals and regional clinics. We have to make sure all the masks and all the equipment is ready. We have to make sure people understand when there is a panic that breaks out, how to address that and calm people down. There's a lot to think about, and that costs money. And I think for that, we ought to be ready.
And look, let's face it, Vera, you're absolutely right when you think about who is attending to these patients. So they can't just get away, as Rosemary has pointed out, and we all know, you can't just get away with wearing a little mask to go in there. They're all,
no.
The original thing in China, they were all getting it. So you've got to give them full outfits, and that costs, looking like a spaceman, and that costs a lot of money.
Well, the other thing also in this country, which really troubles me sometimes, is the fact that even if people are sick, they have to go to work because otherwise they get fired. I just have a story from a few weeks ago where a student was really sick with a terrible cold. Let's not describe the details, but she came to class. I said, "Why are you here? Go away. You're going to infect all of us." And she says, "Well, I have to go to work after this." And I said, "You're going to work like this?" And she goes, "Yes, I have to go work in a juice bar." And I was thinking, "You're going to a juice bar like this?" And she explained to me that she otherwise, if she doesn't show up, will lose her position and she can't pay for college. I mean, that to me is just a horrendous setup to spread disease. And we have that kind of problem in all areas of this society.
Well, do you think she was wrong?
Well, it's a real problem, right?
It's a real problem.
Yeah.
I go to work when I'm sick.
I mean, how
do you?
I go to work when I'm sick.
You were here. I remember.
Whole life, yeah.
I remember. Joe thought you were sort of drooling on him.
I was spewing on him.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's a real problem.
But I didn't get sick.
No, I know.
No, but I mean, you know, we have, as I said, some hand sanitizer and all these things here at the radio station.
Yeah.
So we're regular hand washers, which is what we need, in addition to using hand sanitizer, which is probably best for all of us to do regularly.
But and I think most people do this, and you mentioned the hypochondriac angle here too, but I mean I'll fall into that too. If you're around somebody who's sick, I mean, I just go take like a Karen Silkwood shower. I mean, I'm just, you know, trying to get that stuff off me. More letters.
Okay. Good morning, panel. It's looking like the coronavirus will expose Trump's true unfitness to be president. Perhaps a bright spot in the midst of the global crisis.
See?
Jimmy from Port
Jervis. See, the same thing, that there's like in the horribleness of this, and people are sickening and dying. We are looking for him to fail. It's undeniable.
Yeah. We are, but the stock market is one thing, but people dying from the coronavirus, that's a little much.
That's a little much.
I mean, it's hard to blame. I mean, I'd like to blame everything on Trump, including the rain as I drove up the thruway. But, you know, if the stock market drops precipitously because, for among other reasons, American Airlines, which I believe has now got really hit on the stock market, why? Because the potential business that they're losing
of
cutting off markets and other airlines are to follow and take any big industry that you want, there are going to be implications that are going to damage or hurt these businesses that are going to make the stock market go down. And now, is that Trump's fault? He set himself up for it to him being his fault because he's taken the credit for when the stock market went up. But it's not his fault for something like this.
No, but I mean, he takes credit for it. So now
the
critique also sticks, right?
And he's trying to blame the Democrats.
That's just nonsense.
Yeah, right.
The cut,
yeah.
Okay, so we also heard from Stephen, who said, "Good morning, panel. If the coronavirus expands in U.S. through November, could that suppress voter turnout?" You bet it could.
Oh, you bet.
It could go more than that. Polls will be shut. He could cancel the election.
Yep.
Yeah.
We talked about
two,
that.
Is it also possible that if it becomes widespread that state officials, governors, and even the president could declare a state of emergency and voting could be suspended until the crisis abates? Thank you, Stephen.
Sure, all of this is possible.
Now, you know,
on the other hand, governors have great power in public health emergencies.
That's right. And in this morning's newspaper, there is a very interesting story about George Pataki, of all people, one of the old-style Republicans, saying that Giuliani asked him to keep him in office and to cancel an election
after 9/11.
After 9/11, and he said, Giuliani, of course, said that's BS. But he's
Maggie Haberman was tweeting about this because she wrote the story to exactly what this was when she was still a reporter at the New York Post. And so she was saying what has come out, the story you're referring to, is not new, but it's been resurrected as a result of all this discussion.
I thought it sounded familiar, Ira.
Yeah.
Good point.
Well, that's interesting, you know, because it actually might have been justified after 9/11.
Well, they canceled, if I'm not mistaken, they canceled a primary because it was really within the window.
Well, I do remember that Bloomberg insisted that he be running and that he'd take his office, and they wanted to stop him from doing that.
Right.
One of his better moments.
Yeah, I believe that the New York City primary was supposed to be in
that day.
That day or right around there in September.
Yeah. No, it was that Tuesday, right? It was that day.
Anyway, we've heard from Bob in Albany, who says, Trump's brilliant move. Good morning, panel. All joking aside, you got to admire Trump's gall in appointing science denier Mike Pence to head the U.S. response to the COVID-19 pandemic. Yes, more Americans will probably fall sick and die, but Trump will have Pence to blame, and he can kick him off the ticket and maybe even replace him with Nikki Haley or even Elise Stefanik.
Oh, Lord. Oh,
ouch.
Wasn't it Rob Emanuel who said that every crisis is also an opportunity? It's an interesting letter, isn't it, folks?
Yes.
Think about this for a second. Nikki Haley. Why would you put Nikki Haley on a ticket when she has, we all know, her own thoughts? That's the last person you would want to be vice president. Although,
why?
Well, because she might object to something he told her to do. That's why, because she has
been very adroit at holding her own way and yet not making him look bad. She's extremely good at that.
Okay.
And it's a woman, which he
really
would help him.
I'll concede you that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's a very good point, Rosemary. Okay, so that's Trump's brilliant move from Bob. Hi, panel, says John from Accord, where everybody agrees.
Accord.
Yeah, and drives a foreign car and plays a musical instrument. Hi, panel. I'm trying to separate the risk of the new coronavirus from the panic it's creating. To me, it seems it might be much more communicable than the flu, but fatalities are about half of the typical flu. Many of the people who catch it get milder symptoms. So it seems like eventually it will be just another endemic virus like the flu. Does this have a transmission rate that is a huge problem? Any sign it's mutating into a mass killer? What are the new risks other than it's new? Thanks, John from
Accord. You know, one of the things that struck me about this is that, to the letter writer's point, We don't know. And a lot of this we don't know. And a lot of the scientists don't know. And it hasn't been around enough for them to determine this, which also, by the way, has a great influence on how a vaccine is going to be created, which the president seemed to think was going to be on the shelves by, March Madness, That's the other concern.
Well, part of the problem was you can't know this about a virus. The more it spreads, the wider it spreads, and the faster it spreads, the more the chance for mutations. So while the lethality seems to be in dispute, I swear I don't know what it is, if it's worse or less. In some accountings it is. Our government officials are saying no. I truly don't know, but the chances of it increasing worse every day. I said yesterday, if this gets to Africa,
it is already in North Africa. It is in Iran and killing a lot of people.
And Italy.
Italy has affected predominantly in the area because of older people. It is very dangerous for older people.
Yes, it is.
People 60 and over are particularly frequently affected. Not so much young people. This is the interesting thing.
Because usually with the regular flu or influenza or the strain, it's usually very young and the very old.
Yes, and this one, interestingly enough, is often adults or older adults. And so That's why we're not quite sure what the lethality rate is, except for it's been confirmed that it's quite dangerous for older people or those who have compromised immune systems.
As a 78-year-old, I resent where this is going.
The Channel 4 News last night in New York had a reporter who was looking at x-rays. There was an x-ray on the left of a typical flu case, and there was an x-ray of a right. They had finally gotten an x-ray out of China of someone who had been infected. And
fatally or just infected?
Yes, and the difference, you could see a visible difference in the x-ray, and I can't obviously don't have the medical background to explain it, but the difference was palpable, and the question was, why is it doing this and what can we do? Mm-hmm. So I think everybody seems to be confident that they can come up with a cure and a vaccine, but short term is what the issue is. How much damage is it going to do?
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have more letters and much more conversation. We welcome yours, panel at WAMC.org. We'll return right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Ira Fussfeld, Vera Akarios-Kelly, Rosemary Armeo, I'm Joe Donahue. Alan has letters. We'll go to those.
Thank you, Joe. Okay, so we heard from Chris, who says, Mike Pence, Corona czar. Of course he's a bad choice, but whatever happens, it's the Democrats' fault. Or is this... he's being sarcastic.
That's sarcasm, yeah.
Or this is setting Pence up. To take the fall? Question mark. And then there could be the added benefit to Republicans of a pandemic keeping people from the polls. And that's from Chris. Well, you know, the BBC this morning was talking about some of the Meshuggah theories that are out there, that the CIA started the whole thing in China, or that it escaped from the laboratory, or did any of that stuff. So
well, Rush Limbaugh said CDC has created it.
You know, it's really helpful when they go after your own premier medical agencies, right? I mean, what a nut.
Can we talk about Rush Limbaugh for a minute?
This Why would you waste your breath on that human?
Because he's a
misery.
Medal of Freedom winner.
Depressing.
And he's saying that this is no worse than the regular flu and it's all made up. It's spreading not just fake news, but dangerous news. It's horrible what he did.
Yes.
Judy says, Trump's coronavirus update. As a parent of a kindergartner, I listened to this update hoping to get some, capitalized, information. He kept talking in circles and said nothing real, and I was so S-O-O-O-O frustrated that there was no clear message. It gave me a sense of dread to hear some cheerfully say that they were delighted to have Pence at the helm. Didn't Pence enable outbreak of AIDS in his home state as governor? This is terrifying.
I just read about it. It was interesting. He didn't enable it because, you know, he's not, he doesn't like carry the germs out of a lab. But it was being spread, and health experts said we need a needle exchange program.
Mm-hmm.
And he refused to let it go. He said, if the legislature passes it, I won't sign it. And it was only when the number of cases exploded that he finally said, okay, I'll allow it for a limited period.
No, but first he said, I have to pray on it. And then he came out and said, yes, I'll do it.
So he's, in essence, you know, Pence is pretty much anti-science. And he also feels this need to, at least in the HIV/AIDS situation in this particular county, he felt like those that participated in drug usage needed to be punished first. And that is really troubling, because when you have a public health issue, you need to address whatever the core issues are, the fundamental root causes, rather than punish people for conduct that is going to go further underground if you try to publicly identify or shame them or register them for misconduct. So this is the most unhelpful approach and actually destructive and dangerous approach you can have in public health.
And yet, 90% of the Republican Party stand by Trump no matter what he does or what he says.
Well, and you wonder what the support will be for Pence, but it's, you know, it is scary to have him overseeing something where a guy who believes that you can pray away homosexuality, that you're going to be able to pray away the virus. I don't know. It's concerning.
All I can say is
Susan Collins might say.
some of the clerics in Iran have similarly advocated for home brews that should take care of the coronavirus. So why doesn't Pence go over there and learn something from the Iranian mullahs?
So, we've heard from...
And on that note, let's go back to the letters.
So we've heard from
Sorry
Jane.
That slipped out, people. I say that to my classes when I go off track.
We've heard from James, Pence and coronavirus. Panel, Pence seems uniquely unqualified to handle this pandemic. Let's see if the president directs him to speed up the Mexico wall in order to prevent the influx of corona beer. Jim in Montgomery.
Stocks are down 552.
Already?
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, boy. Well, the one thing I can tell you folks is I won't be able to retire.
You weren't going
We're
to.
We're not going to say anything.
Yeah, like there were plans.
Everybody's giving me a look.
Stunned silence. Stunned silence.
So let's just talk about the stock markets for a second, because what this... If anything, that press conference, at least in the president's mind, was supposed to calm fears, correct?
Not a reassuring sign.
Yeah, no.
And Ian says, Chicken Little and COVID-19. Please be careful about crying if the sky is falling on the topic of COVID-19. Facts about the virus need to come before criticism about the response. I'm no fan of this administration, and last night's press conference was a joke. But we need to know more about this disease. The press should be careful about exaggerating the possible consequences of the disease, else it will be blamed for overreacting, and that's Ian from Altamont.
We had the same thing, Alan. You remember with Ebola when that struck a few years? Yeah. This is a real problem for the press because it must be covered. Information is power.
Sure.
But how do you provide information and it not be panic invoking? It's a real fine line.
This writer was saying the press should not exaggerate, and that's 100% correct. But what you're saying, rightly so, is we have to report it.
Yeah, If you report on what's happening in Italy or Iran, is that exaggerating the danger to the U.S.?
Or if they're going to cancel the Olympics or whatever the case may be, is that
factual? Here's the thing: you can always weave in public health experts, epidemiologists who speak directly about what to do, remind people to be careful in terms of their sanitary practices. I mean, you can constantly do this to remind people and educate people on how best to prevent any kind of spread. And that's what you do. You report something and then talk about what is happening in the United States or in your particular area. You can do this without creating panic. Just write about what happens and then have an expert, a health expert, speak to how to best prevent further spread.
Very scary. Melinda says, coronavirus. Trump can't simply sharpie this disaster away to protect himself in his election. This is all frightening enough. We also not being able to believe anything coming out of Trump's mouth or his cronies. Believe Pence? Really? As if he will contradict his boss? Doubtful. We can only hope our state governments will be honest and forthcoming to its citizens. Well, you know, there's something about this and the presidential election I would like to raise, and that is, at what point do we hear something coming out of Democrats' mouths which say this is the way to proceed as opposed to what the president is telling us? I'm not hearing that right now. I'm just hearing the criticism of the president. And I think you're going to vote for somebody, you want to think it's going to be better, not the same.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't, until this press conference, the president, the White House did not portray itself as an entity that was had its arms around this issue, was addressing this issue, had a game plan to address this issue. Last night was the first we really have seen any sort of action in that regard. So the Democrats were correct to be critical of the president without even have to say, here's what we would do. Right now, it's his job to do it. All they can do is prod him and say, you've got to be doing something.
Can I ask when you think he should have acted? I mean, maybe it's because of late reporting, but we're just hearing now of Iran and Canada. Isn't the United States' response in line with other countries?
I don't know, but it just seems to me that when this became a major issue in China, the wheels should have been in motion in this country. Now, he might say that they were, and we just didn't talk about it, but then he should have been talking about it because we needed an authoritative figure and an authoritative government to give the country some guidance to allay some fears.
It's true, but it is on his watch.
Sure.
And this is a guy who takes credit for anything on his watch, right? In other words, the stock market goes up, that's my doing, not the evil Democrats, even though it's crap. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
About a minute, but go ahead.
I wanted to just quickly say, let's think more globally about this. The Trump administration has continuously argued for cutting funds to global health efforts and global approaches to addressing pandemics. He has begun to cut support for further investigations into the Ebola virus and treatment of Ebola virus. That is so unhelpful because a pandemic, in essence, spreads from one country to another and you can't simply close down your borders and it won't enter. So the idea that you simply focus your funding domestically and somehow prevent all diseases to enter the United States is simply ludicrous. So the funding has to go globally into international organizations that fight it systematically and address all the health concerns all across the world, rather than just looking at one area geographically and saying the disease stops here.
That's the end of hour one. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, Ira Fussfeld, Vera Karius-Kelly, Rosemary Armeo, Sarah LaDuke with a big stack of letters coming in the studio. I'm Joe Donahue. We'll be back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. We are going to continue with letters. We have a lot of them. As I mentioned, we got a huge stack just before we went to the break. So we have even gotten more. We have put them in a pile, collated them, and we're ready to go.
Disinfected them.
Yes, that's right. True. Yeah.
Cynthia says, coronavirus resources. Good morning, panel. We appreciate your keeping us informed with facts as the coronavirus moves forward. Two thoughts on U.S. resources. One, 3.8 million just moved to fund the wall against. How could this not immediately move to health agencies, be immediately moved to health agencies? Great to hear, too. It says fear, but here Trump will punish sanctuary states, New York, California, with lack of available testing and funding. Thank you. Cynthia from Hillsdale.
Yeah, the courts have just, at least one federal court has just ruled that sanctuary cities can indeed suffer federal punishment. It'll go to the Supreme Court. I don't know if that will improve the situation.
No, but we'll see.
Can you repeat that one more time?
Yeah, it's the second appeals court just ruled that the federal government did have the right to punish states and cities that had sanctuary laws. Okay. So things like the travelers and cutting back on aid for things like health clinics will be allowed. It will go to the Supreme Court, though.
Yes, it will.
Yeah, so it'll go to the Supreme Court.
Will that make a difference?
Predict how that's going to happen.
Yeah.
Tim says, Trump coronavirus comments. I'll be honest with you, Rosemary. I am so angry about all the times I said during the last presidential election, think about the Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. And it just got me angry, that's all. Okay, so Tim says, Trump coronavirus comments, and how pathetic was the president? I'll prepare comments last night. Okay, it says, I'll prepare comments, but it's obviously ill, and one doesn't have a... Joe, tell him again. Read your stuff. And how pathetic was the president's ill-prepared comments last night? He sounded so unprepared, like a high school student reading his homework assignment. I like that one. In front of the class, which he had put together on the school bus on his way to school, Tim in Scotia. We all had the same, when I was growing up, we all had the sixth grade, we all had the same World Book Encyclopedia. And you would come into with your report, your quote report, and you would somebody would be reading theirs, and yours would say exactly the same thing. That they're
saying. It's the same now. They just use Wikipedia.
Yes, right, that's true.
Right.
Eric says, imagine. Good morning, panel. Imagine the effect the coronavirus could have on a cultural destination like the Berkshires, where audiences and crowds are the economy. Scary. And that's our very good friend, the director, Eric, from Richmond.
Mm-hmm. Well, Trump was trying to point out that people who might have been considering vacationing out of this country can vacation here. And that's,
now see
and
our that, good places.
Yeah. Now, well, I mean, I was thinking, well, let's take it to the extreme. Mm-hmm. What's going to happen if people are afraid to congregate at Tanglewood? What's going to happen if you have tickets to go to the Yankees game? You want to sit there with 45,000 people and wonder if the guy next to you has the virus or if the hot dog vendor has it. I mean, we really can't even fathom what could happen if this thing grows.
And we heard from Russ, Trump's downfall, the impact of this coronavirus in this country may prove to be Trump's downfall. Politics and talk can't control something like this. If he doesn't allow his administration to, quote, do the right things and people get sick and some die, the American people may choose to not keep him in charge. Life or death is a really big deal, and that's Russ in Greenfield.
Well, that's a very important thought, especially I believe Trump is thinking along those lines, and that's why he pointed Pence as the potential person to take the fall. You know, if something goes wrong, it must be Pence's fault, who didn't manage this these sort of regional outbreaks perhaps correctly.
I've read that it was Jared who was pushing him to downplay it. And to
really?
And to use the angle that the press was being alarmist and that calm was what was needed. And interestingly, he wasn't put in charge.
And that's because he hates. And of course, they hate the press so much.
Yeah.
You know that this is just one other example of how they can get back.
But
at
again,
the
use of the word "don't panic." Nope. The press is not panicking, to my observation. The press is reporting, and to the extent that reporting is believed to be panic, I'm not sure what the press should do differently.
Yeah, as I say, I know that they take this. Reporters are taking this very seriously.
Sure.
How do you inform without panicking?
Yeah, I'd like to follow what Fox News does for the next week or so, because
yeah,
as Fox
point.
News goes, so goes Trump.
Yeah.
And Sean says, coronavirus. Good morning, panel. Alan, stop the fear-mongering. Simple fact, smallpox in all forms had about a 20% fatality rate. The flu has about a half, parenthesis, 0.005 of 1% fatality rate. Coronavirus, given the current administration, around 2% fatality rate. I'm just exhausted by your personal sensationalized statements. Thank you and have a splendid day. And back to you, Sean. Have a splendid day.
Have a nice day.
Have a nice day. If you know what I mean. But the thing is, your numbers go up considerably when you're a little older. See, so I'm a little older now. So my chances aren't as good as the ones you're portraying here, Sean. But in any case, please, Sean, have a very, very, very good day.
Well, we don't know how accurate the numbers are coming out of China. We you know, whether or not they're purposely hiding numbers or whether the tallies are difficult to get in some of the more remote areas. So those statistics may not be accurate right now.
But the president spoke with President Xi.
Yes, he's a good guy. He works very hard.
Yes. And so here's the thing. What we do know about China is that they have misled us on all kinds of bits of information. We know
right.
that for sure. So we shouldn't trust necessarily anything that comes out of China.
Or
I would
Trump's
say.
Mouth.
Yeah, well, that's for sure. I mean, we established that. I'm just saying neither one of these leaders are trustworthy when it comes to providing public health information or, in case of Trump, understanding science, speaking with scientists, appreciating the insights of scientists, and letting scientists explain the science.
We know it's bad enough in China that the United States is not receiving goods and services that China produces because China's largely shut down. Mm-hmm. I mean, I read last night things that you wouldn't think of, such as artificial sweetener for Coca-Cola. That's made in China.
See, there'll be some benefit to this.
That's right. No more Coke Zero.
Okay, so Virginia says, Pence as a medical expert. Panel, are we taking bets yet as to when Pence will use the coronavirus to control LGBTQ and Women's health care. Disease can be a useful tool in controlling populations via quarantine and manipulating public opinion, and that's Virginia in Clifton Park.
Explain this to me. Why did he make a point of saying that Pence would be coordinating, but he wasn't a czar?
Because the press recommended that he appoint a coronavirus czar, and I don't think he likes that term. He's the czar.
He doesn't like the losses.
Yeah, I mean, I think the connotation of the word czar is that he's in charge, and the person in charge is Trump.
Because, you know, he relies on his gut, not on science, to decide what to recommend people, you know, to the general public.
And Peter says coronavirus is in John Barry's seminal book on the 1918 flu pandemic. He makes the case that many more people died because of the Wilson administration's lack of transparency and honesty about the threat. And here we go again. So let me ask you all a question. That's Peter from Enfield.
That was the second reference to that book
John
this week
Barry.
On the show.
Yeah. I'm going
to
order that.
You talked to him, right?
Well, no, Bob referenced the book yesterday.
Yeah, right. But it leads me to wonder, and I'm sorry, this is a Rosemary-like approach, which is, do we know that this president is not telling the truth or is obfuscating the truth?
Oh, you mean in terms of the virus?
Yes.
He doesn't have the capital to for us to automatically believe that he's telling the
more?
Truth. So
well,
that's the I think that's the answer.
So when he says things like, oh, it's we're pretty sure that this virus will go away once the weather improves. Do you remember that?
I'm like,
no scientist actually says that.
Well, but they have been historically with the quote-unquote regular flu, when the warm weather comes, the flu season
right.
ends. So he's presuming, I guess, that that's going to happen here.
Right.
And let's say it does. So that's great. Now the flu season begins with a new round of coronavirus for which the vaccine is still not ready. Mm-hmm. So we be back in the same place next year.
Here's a lovely letter from Jim. Who says, what is Mr. Trump lying about? What could the news be lying about? Remember, the news hypes news to sell news. This news will fade like all news cycles. Are you hyping for donations?
Oh, my gosh.
To which I say to Jim, have a good day.
Well, I actually tried very hard today to talk about some of the things that we can do that we know the CDC experts recommend. So we're not hyping. We're actually also speaking about what we all can and should be doing to prevent any kind of spread of be it the flu or coronavirus or any other infection.
World health authorities have been warning about the increasing possibility of a pandemic for many years now. Mm-hmm. We are a global society with all the good and bad that implies.
Including the economies.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we're seeing that. You know, Wilbur Ross's first, our lovely corrupt Secretary of Commerce, his first reaction was, oh, this will be good. This will scare jobs back into the U.S. Our economy will benefit from China's misfortune. The opposite of a global view. It's dangerous. It's silly.
Dear panel, says Zach, on the subject of Pence. As governor of Indiana, Pence oversaw one of the country's worst HIV outbreaks because of his refusal to distribute needles to IV drug users on the so-called moral grounds, parentheses, in other words, Christian fundamentalism. He is an incredibly poor choice to oversee this effort, does not inspire confidence like most everything else from this administration. Zach in High Falls.
Absolutely. Very correct.
And Joseph says on the question of Pence, just to do a little research on Pence's history on health issues and discover his disbelief of the link between cigarettes and lung disease, his advocacy in Congress for the tobacco industry, and that Indiana has one of the highest smoking populations in the U.S., his disbelief of scientific, I guess, data makes him the most perfect leader to solve a pandemic, as all we need is hopes and prayers. God help us. Amen. And we heard from AJ, who said, Trump, I could see Trump using a coronavirus outbreak as a rationale to shut down certain regions in attempts to manipulate the primaries. What do you think?
Yes.
You say yes?
I say yes. It is a possibility.
You know, Trump said something. He was asked about the cuts that he had made to health agencies. Mm-hmm. And I'm paraphrasing, but he basically says, as a businessman, I don't believe we should have people who are just sort of sitting around. And if we need to get them, we can bring them in a hurry. But the key phrase there was, as a businessman. I think that he is approaching this as many CEOs might, which is to put the best face forward on it right now so as to not hurt the business or the brand, mm-hmm. and hope that, in fact, that he has put a lid on it. And I think that that's his approach here as a businessman.
Spelling and the coronavirus, says Kathy from Albany. Good morning, panel. I stumbled upon a tweet by Trump last night about the virus and sad to see he misspelled the word coronavirus.
With an A instead of an
yes,
C-A.
That's right.
He misspells so many words. Wow. And puts capitals everywhere.
Am I being too sensitive, or does it show his lack of interest? Ah, well, I must get back to seeing what Melania wore in India on their latest trip. Thank you for your fine discussions. Be well. And that's Kathy from Albany.
All I say to that is kofefe.
Well, in his tweet on the review of the debate, it was mm-hmm. Elizabeth Warren, or Pocahontas, I believe is what he said, that she choked as opposed to choked.
Choked, yeah. Well, it's supposed to be now elitist to point out the spelling and grammatical errors right. in the tweets and other communications of our
really?
Foes.
And
of
why
our
is that?
Of our rivals?
It's elitist for those of us to point
Trump
out
supporters.
These.
That's right.
Because they're ignorant, because they're poorly educated, and not all of us love the poorly educated.
I love the poorly educated because they come into my classes and they're well educated, but I'd like my leaders to be more educated and be able to spell.
But we all make mistakes in spelling.
Yeah, we all make mistakes.
Well.
But not maybe on the Twitter feed of the White House, which he could have maybe
you make a point.
Spell check.
Well, maybe.
And
or
these
maybe,
are not occasional. They're constant.
Or maybe what's going on here is that Trump, in we know always plays to his base, thinks this is a smart way of saying to the base, see, I can't spell either.
I don't think that's true. I think the defense is that I can't spell either, but I don't think he tries to misspell words.
I think
he has nobody in the John with him to help him get it right the first time.
It's a general view that spelling and grammatical language is not important, and that is dangerous.
Well, if you're not really interested in communicating clearly, I guess that could be the case.
But he does communicate clearly. That's the scary part.
Well, in some ways. Not on science.
All right, back to the letters.
Anyway, thank you, Joe.
It's
John,
hocus.
Hey, Joe,
it's
you
clear,
really ought to be running the debates. When you say get back to the letters, you know what you're talking about.
I'm raising my hands.
John says, imagine if even the poorest in America had adequate health care coverage, wouldn't the coronavirus have a hell of a fight on its hands? And that's John in Windsor, Connecticut. And Rick says, sick time. Panel, one of the larger problems with sick time is that people abuse it. Many people use it for personal time off and do not have it available when they are truly sick. This is a constant problem for many business owners. I love the show. Keep up the good work.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's a really interesting question about sick time. And the reason people abuse it is because there's no mental health days, and Americans mm-hmm. are forced to work more than any other people on Earth.
Is that true?
Yes. Europeans get much more vacation time.
At least when you said any other people in the world, you mean in the highly developed industrialized
world.
The ones that,
you know what I'm talking about, the industrial countries.
Yeah.
People get exhausted. There you go.
And, you know, you don't have any rest. And no wonder people, it's sort of considered suspicious if you actually say you need some rest or you need a day off. And when you're sick, you can't really mm-hmm. call your boss and say, I really need a day off. Like the example I mentioned with my poor student mm-hmm. who I sent home because I didn't want to get her.
Mm-hmm. Well, the problem, Vera, is that sick days mm-hmm. are legal, and I really need a day off. May not be.
Yeah.
Right?
This is a huge problem in this country we don't respect labor.
You have so many businesses, certainly the one that I'm most familiar with, that are trying to be as efficient as mm-hmm. they can to try to stay afloat.
Right.
And thus there are fewer people working. And so when you have more sick time or you offer more sick time, you have even fewer people in your mm-hmm. building doing your work. I'm not defending it. I'm just pointing out that is what's going
right.
on.
If you have a skeletal crew, you know, you can't afford it.
Right.
And in addition to that, it's just very complicated to run a business if you don't have people trained for particular jobs and somebody is sick, and then what are you going to do, right?
And then add pregnancy into that, which is not a sickness, but we treat it that way, and we don't give enough time off for it.
For this, largely for the same reason.
Right, and it hurts women much more than it does men.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mike from Wappinger says, instead of talking about this crisis leading to Trump's defeat by way of the stock market, talk about the fact that he fired all the public health experts who would have handled this crisis. We did talk about that, Mike, but thanks for reminding us again.
Yeah.
And then also Danny says, hand sanitizer. Hand sanitizer does not work unless combined with physical removal. What's that, physical removal?
Rubbing?
No, I think physical.
Wash it, cut it off.
Physical removal of somebody who actually has the act of coronavirus, like quarantine, I assume. I think hand washing does work. Hand washing with soap especially works. 20 seconds or more. And in addition,
you sing the happy birthday song, right?
Isn't twice. What tell you? Randy Rainbow had the best tweet today. It's like, okay, so I get it. I sing happy birthday twice while washing my hand. Do I then get to eat two cakes?
Right. And you die of obesity.
But I mean, you know, in essence, I have to say, a lot of people go to the bathroom and don't wash their hands.
But
just
wasn't
observe.
That letter specifically about hand sanitizer?
I'm not done yet.
Yeah.
Hand sanitizer does not work unless combined with a physical removal. It's a myth that it will be effective against anything, much less COVID-19, to simply rub it into your hands. You need to use it like soap and rinse it off. Rinse it off. That's the removal.
That's why you're...
For it to be effective. Considering that, why not just soap and water? The whole hand.
Yeah. Okay. I guess I should have waited to the end.
The whole hand sanitizer craze is simply an effective marketing ploy, which becomes dangerous if people think it will protect them against viral infection by rubbing it in.
But isn't that like chicken soup? It can't hurt.
No.
I mean, a lot of people like myself bring small bottles of hand sanitizer on the airplane.
And
three or four times during the plane ride, you're washing your
hands. So it's good for when you can't have access to hand washing all the time, which is, of course, the number one way to protect yourself.
Like, I know I shower in it after I go on the subway. Like, right? You just feel gross?
Yeah, you try
or
not
is it
to
just
touch.
Me?
Or try not to touch things, you know?
Like, well, that's right. Those escalators, the railings.
Escalators, I know
the president said this.
And don't touch your face, you know? I mean, I don't, you know, with your hands are mostly transmitting those kinds of problems. So,
and sure, when you're on the airplane, please don't breathe.
Well, don't breathe. And the other thing, my wife was pointing this out because she's traveling this week, and was the airline giving you the earbuds? Are those reusable?
I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised.
They're all in little packets.
But if they've been quote-unquote, like if you put them back and then they rinse them and then they put them back in the package, that's my question.
They say the worst thing are the trays, that those never get washed at all and they're disgusting.
Yeah, that's right.
They're
that's
like
right.
Petri dishes.
Right. Yeah.
That's right. And Joanne's has thoughts. Hi, panel. Isn't it just a bit ironic that science denying germaphobe could be laid low by a virus? Let's remember that 40,000 people a year die in traffic accidents, and we still take our chances with that. Mm-hmm. Life is dangerous. You folks are the best.
Thank you.
It's always nice to end on a good note, right? And then we also heard from Lisa, who said CDC. Good morning, panel. I encourage everyone to get their information regarding the coronavirus straight from the CDC or the WHO. Several years ago, my 12-year-old son developed a rare staph infection in his hip bone, and the CDC was all over it so fast it made my head spin. Mm. The medical professionals of the CDC are vigilant, dedicated, and highly skilled. If they could take such fast and drastic action to some 12-year-old in a little town, I have complete faith that it can handle this crisis. I just think it's very important that people do not rely on the faux information from that guy pretending to be president, Lisa from Saugerty.
The problem is, will we be hearing from the CDC if we now have the filter of Mike Pence?
Right.
They may know everything, but will what they know get to us?
Right. Well, I'm pretty sure they'll speak up. I'm pretty sure on that.
Well,
because
not if their marching order from Trump is
I mean, the Weather Service, I would have vouched for them until Alabama.
Okay, well, but I think some of those people are so concerned about public health issues. They're ethical people. They will step down if there's an attempt to muzzle them, and then they will speak up publicly.
Right. And then where are we? We have 3,000 people.
You know where we
DOJ.
Are? We're 10 seconds away from our break.
Okay. I'll shut up.
That's exactly where we are. So we'll be back for the final round here, WAMC.org. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable. And let's see. The Goldman Sachs' warning coronavirus crisis likely will mean no earnings growth for U.S. companies in 2020. The Dow is currently down 893 points.
Yep. Whoa.
Correct. As
so
of
we're approaching
right now.
3,000 points.
And it's hit into a, it's hit into the 900, so it's bouncing up and down. So we will obviously be following that story. Alan's going to go back to the letters. I just have a quick one we want to address.
Sure.
That is from John of Albany, who writes, given the need for WAMC listeners to trust the integrity of roundtable commentators, that's you all, I request that any commentator with a financial connection to any presidential campaign disclose those connections. I'm also okay. Well, that's the first part of the letter.
Okay.
So
should we answer that?
Yes. So we had a commentator on. We have a commentator on our program, a regular commentator, Libby Post, who is supporting Mike Bloomberg. With that, as she announced, and also announced that she was not being paid in any way, shape, or form by the campaign. So
that meets criteria one
did
that we know.
We did announce that. Two, I'm also very, the letter writer again asks, I'm also very curious about financial contributions to WAMC from Bloomberg Philanthropies, and I'll throw that one to you, Alan.
Well, of course, I don't know all the Bloomberg Philanthropies, but certainly none that I know of, that's for sure.
Certainly not any like big checks or anything.
No.
Nothing coming from the check of Bloomberg Philanthropies.
No.
So.
Have a good day.
Have a good day. Stay safe. Okay. Now we go to other letters, and Alan has those.
Okay, here we go. Michael says, unfortunately, the stock market slide isn't a big deal to Trump because he will pull the blame on the coronavirus, and that will work with his followers. I don't know. I said something before, which I truly believe in. If the Democrats are going to, you know, correct Trump on his approach to the coronavirus, they better come up with something better than he has said. And that's not easy to do. And then Tom says, paradox, panel, I have given up with the good morning. Every learning institution in America stretches science in its various forms with their students, yet our president and his administration completely eschews science. Paradoxically, 45% of Americans, the very parents of the students who are being taught the vital importance of science in our world, are okay with Trump and his ignorant and arrogant agenda. How can they reconcile that? Science represents change. Change equals altering business as usual. Business as usual got us to this point where economic trumps world health. And that's Tom from Wappingers. Okay, Tom, but here's the thing of it. How can they reconcile that? They don't care. They don't care. They just do their thing. And John says, coronavirus, here are some facts. The flu has a 0.1 fatality rate, 0.1%. Coronavirus is 2.5 deadly, 25 times more. So 1 in 1,000 die of the flu, 1 in 40 are dying of coronavirus. John in West Albany. I don't know about that. Does anybody else? These facts and figures have been floating all over the place. And then Andy says, Pence, good morning, panel. Who better than our own Uber Christian to be put in charge during the end of times? Plague and pestilence is upon us. Best, Andy.
Oh, good letter.
I like that letter, yeah.
That's funny.
That's good.
And Gus says, pandemic. A plague descends on the land, and the evil king is chased from his throne. That's some Old Testament stuff. Biblical. It's almost enough to give one faith. Faith. Gus in Catskill. See,
really?
You know,
yeah,
this
so
there's
funny.
A certain amount
yeah.
of uniformity in these letters. Yeah. And Diane says, coronavirus and the it says electron, but I have a feeling it's election. If I were part of a state legislature or governor of a state, I would start my fight with getting people to vote by mail absentee ballot. That way, if gatherings at poll places become dangerous or get canceled, we can still have an election. And that's from Diane, who points out that she is a daily listener from New Jersey. And he says, I love you all, and we love you, Diane. Thank you for that. And then also, Gary says, President's Wednesday night address. Dear panel, how can the ill-informed, incoherent babbling of the president's address last night reassure the people of the United States? We need a president that demonstrates strong leadership and honest sincerity. Gary from Saratoga Springs. And the only thing that comes to my head is, you know, FDR saying the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. And that's that. Now that's a speech.
I just want to go back real quick. Sure. I just want to clarify something that we said earlier to the letter writer about Bloomberg Philanthropies. I was just looking at their financial report as well as NPR's financial report. I did think of whether they gave money to NPR. And they do. They do not, or haven't. At least it's not in their annual report. It is also not in NPR's. So we'll assume that is also.
Well, it's a concern that if they gave money to, say, WAMC, that we would somehow favor that particular politician.
I think that's the kind of thing.
I mean,
you're getting the AMC, as all public radio stations get money from the government. Does that mean that your commentary favors the government?
We were pretty complimentary and hopeful about Bloomberg until the first debate.
I was not.
I don't say uniformly, but overall, the roundtable was. We got many letters of it.
It was certainly fine. Wasn't a statement of the station.
Casey says, coronavirus. Why is the panel so uninformed? The administration has been on top of this from day one. I've been following. Where have you been? From the very beginning, the administration shut down travel from China. Congress appropriates money, not the president. Where's the Congress been? Oh, they've been busy trying to impeach the president. And that's from Casey. But Casey, wait a second here. Is not entirely true. Congress does appropriate the money, but the president has to sign off. And if the president doesn't suggest it, it ain't going to happen.
I don't know where she or he is getting the information that the president has been on this from the beginning. There's no evidence of that I'm aware of.
Also, you know, closing borders, as I said, is a ridiculous quarantine effort because obviously we flew in American citizens from the cruise ship and they were affected and then quarantined in the country and still we have a case spreading. I mean, these kinds of quarantine questions, you know, they sometimes work, but obviously not consistently. And it's impossible in the global world to entirely close up the borders and prevent a pandemic to spread.
Well, a wall, you know, will keep out viruses.
Oh, for sure.
Okay, and we heard from Greg, Trump and the scientists. Trump still dismisses climate change regardless how many scientists tell him it's a real problem. What makes us think he'll listen to scientists over the concerns with corona? Exactly. Greg from Rexford. And we also heard from Jody, who says spelling. Hello, panel. Accurate spelling is not a sign of intelligence. I have to say I agree with that. What Trump says, I do say it because...
It's a sign of care with the language, checking, writing. Why else do we extort on people writing into us?
Here's my hand. Slap it.
Yeah. That's...
But I don't think any of us said a sign of intelligence.
No.
Okay. Sign of education.
Is not a sign of intelligence. What Trump says, capital letters, is what we should be paying attention to. Have a great day.
Have you listened to what he said? Oh, my God, that's worse.
It's an indication of something if you're not spelling. It's either ignorance or carelessness. And if you write a paragraph without noting the spelling that needs correction, then that's just laziness.
And now, in an age of spell checker, one thinks that's also a certain amount of laziness.
Agreed.
You could use spell check, and you could also use a staff member to double check your communication. If you're not a good speller,
but he can't do that at 2 in the morning when he's tweeting.
Wait a second. We still don't know who's doing all of this. It's possible that he's doing it all, but it's also possible he has somebody else working.
I think the ones that are misspelled are his. I don't mean that facetiously. There are tweets that come out on his account that are not written by him.
And we know who the guy is. There's one guy
from Dutchess County.
Yeah.
Scavino?
Yeah, he has the office right next to the president and is oversees the account.
And okay, we read Jody's. Thank you.
I'm like, what was that?
No, I just...
Did I do something wrong?
Not at all. Oh, no.
Robin says coronavirus. A little long, I'll try. A huge concern that I am not hearing addressed in the press are all the uninsured and underinsured Americans and their response to being possibly being infected by the virus. I read a story of a businessman who returned from a trip to China and experienced flu-like symptoms. With abundance of caution, he had himself tested for coronavirus and consequently faces several thousand in charges due to the streamlined Trump approval healthcare plan that did not cover the test. How many other Americans will be faced with a similar choice and avoid testing due to insurance concerns, thus causing further spread of the virus? With the funds being appropriated by Congress, or will the funds being appropriated by Congress cover caring for this part of our population?
Well, this was a point Ira brought up very early, especially with the homeless population and others in other cities throughout the country. I'm sorry, Vera, did you want to?
Well, no, I mean, in essence, this is the fundamental question. This is a public health situation, and if we want a spread of any disease to be stopped, it has to be identified in time, and therefore all medical costs related to testing need to be covered by the government. And if that's not decided, if that's not the plan we have, we're in big trouble in this country, because then people will avoid medical assistance, avoid being tested, and spread a disease.
We have 2.5 minutes, Alan. I think, how many letters do you
have? One
more. Oh, good. We certainly have time for that.
Should I read slowly?
No, we're good. We have other stuff.
Brenda says, coronavirus. The 30-year-old doctor who tried to publicize the coronavirus died of it. So it's not only the elderly and the ailing who will die, Brenda.
No, I think it's not.
No, that's true. Absolutely.
Can I raise a Bloomberg issue?
Of course. Please do.
And I'm not a Bloomberg supporter, but just a question. A lot of discussion about how Bloomberg is buying the election, and that's the phrase that we're hearing often, is 2 points. One, is there any doubt in anybody's mind that if any of the other candidates had the wherewithal, they would have not spent it just as Bloomberg?
Well, Steyer.
He doesn't have as much wherewithal. He's spending a lot, but he doesn't spend. But if Bernie or any of the other ones, so that's, I think, a hollow complaint. The other point of it is those advertisements, that $400 million worth of advertising, if the message that he was providing was bad, was anti-Semitic, homophobic, name whatever anti you want to say, I wouldn't care if he spent $100 million, he would be vilified for them. So I'm just, this whole business about him buying the election, it just seems like sour grapes to
me. So very quickly, Ira, you said you are not.
No, I'm not. I'll vote for him if he's a nominee.
But who are you supporting?
I'm nobody. I don't like any of them, to be honest. But any of them will get my vote over Trump.
Well, are you going to vote in the primary?
No, I'm not registered. I'm a hard-ass journalist who does not belong to either party.
I think of no better way to end the program with the words hard-ass journalist.
Have a nice day.
Okay, have a nice day indeed. Thanks to Alan Chartok, Ira Fussfeld, Vera Karius-Kelly, and Rosemary Armeo. It was a really good panel. Thank you all very much for being so great. We will continue with our program right after this short break.